14 minutes. It's fine. Yeah, it's absolutely. It's great. Actually, it is a 15 extra minutes basically that we end up getting.
Right.
Which I think lets us, you know, spread our wings a little bit more. It's not too tightly packed in. Also, you know, I love the BBC, but we were being measured for sort of minutes on each party.
Right.
Which is sort of fair enough. They have to do that.
Yeah.
They don't have to do that on TLC. So right. We can sort of talk about whatever actually is the news. We were never doing anything biased when we were on it before. We were just talking, what's the funniest subject? And often the funniest subject was the current government, because the opposition aren't really doing anything. And that is the case again now. So the only thing to really talk about is Starmer. Thankfully, Reform exists and they keep doing stuff, but it is all Starmer at the moment, isn't it?
I mean, and in a way, it's a sort of wonderful relief, because when he started, I never thought Starmer would be funny in any possible way.
No,
but he's given a lot.
It seems it doesn't matter how boring you are. If you are the Prime Minister, you are destined for calamity.
See, people don't understand jokes are never biased. It's not our fault who's funny. How long is a recording then? How long are you sitting there for?
It is generally between 2.5 and 3 hours.
Right, wow.
Basically, and there's not really any breaks.
Yeah.
They don't like it if you need to go to the toilet because it destroys momentum. So if anyone ever goes, oh, is it all right to go to the toilet? You know, the producers are going, oh, for God's sake. But it's also not fair, is it? Because the audience aren't allowed to do that.
Yeah,
they can't leave.
Point.
So we always try and avoid it. But yeah, it's about 3 hours, and we talk about, there's always loads of news stories that we talk about that don't end up in the edit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they might end up in compilations. Like, we often find ourselves always every week, we're doing some sort of, like the real news, some sort of animal-based story of like some mad thing an animal's done or whatever that week, that there's a funny video to show. And obviously that's not going to make the edit the same week as the Epstein files, is it? Because we're going to have a lot to say about that.
How often do you find you've all thought of the same jokes?
Less than you'd think, actually. Mm. Because I think they're very good at booking quite a mix of voices, and you sort of know going in with the lineup who, you know, there's certain people. Alistair Beckett King's a good example, right? You've probably done news because you've done a lot, who you just know, well, I'm not going to have any angle that he's going to have.
He's going to have the intergalactic angle.
We don't think in the same way. Yeah. Exactly. Milton Jones isn't going to be saying the same things that I'm going to be saying. And so it's actually not that difficult. Occasionally, you know, there's like an obvious angle on a story that everyone's racing to a specific gag. But actually, I think in general, if there's a really obvious gag about something, comedians try and avoid it. Because especially, you know, by the time you're recording it, if there's an obvious gag about something, it's been done on the internet.
Yeah, sure.
So you want something that's going to play in a week, even 2 weeks, when people are watching on catch-up and stuff like that. So you want some sort of original thought.
Is the mood different now to how it was when Mock the Week was last with us? Is it sort of a bit more angry? I don't mean the show, I just mean the sort of the,
you know, the national mood.
The national mood generally. Like, jokes just sort of land a bit more bitterly now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. It's like, people are watching with more of an agenda, I think, and a bit more of a bias. My very first episode I did was the day after the Brexit result.
Right.
So I think that was the turning point. Not me going on Mock the Week. Once I went on, people got very angry.
Suddenly fury based on the letters
the BBC were getting. No, I just think before that, I obviously grew up watching Mock the Week, and loads of it was, and you don't really notice it until you're doing it, but you go, oh, they used to just be talking about how Glastonbury's muddy.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Old trains are delayed and stuff like that. And by the time I got on it, it was like, oh no, British politics has gone absolutely insane, and American politics has gone insane. It was 2016, Brexit happened. The next episode I got on, Theresa May called an election and then lost a majority. So it was like, I was a big game player only at first when I was doing one episode a series. And then it just got more and more mad. And then we did the COVID episodes where it was all just like, to be honest, I loved the COVID episodes because they really figured out how to do the Zoom. And also the news would be like really specific stuff, like who's in what tier.
Yeah.
And also like you can go to the pub if you have a Scotch egg and stuff like that.
And everyone knew it.
And everyone knew
everyone
the news.
The same
exactly.
Common ground. Yeah.
Exactly. You didn't have to do any explaining. You know, Trump Greenland, you have to get a bit of information over the line before you can do a gag.
Do you worry at all about offending your audience? Because like you never know, because some like really contentious political topics, if you make a joke about them, half the people are going to love it, and half the people are like, oh, we shouldn't be joking about that.
No, I think you've just got to trust your instincts and your own conviction in what you want to say. I think the time people get tripped up on this is when they say something that they don't mean or care about.
Yeah.
Then again, I do also think it's a bit of a defence to be like, I'm just trying to say a funny thing. I don't have this opinion. I'm just, who cares? I'm just trying on this opinion like a hat because I thought it served the joke the best. That's sort of how I feel about things. It's like, I'm never trying to say anything political on the show. I don't care about getting my political opinion across. I don't think anyone cares to hear my political opinion. If ever I've said an opinion, it's because it was the setup to the punchline, which I thought was silly. Maybe I should think about it more, but I'm not worried about someone being offended about something I say on the show because, if I said anything truly offensive, they'd cut it out anyway, you know?
So my great mentor on the news quiz, Jeremy Hardy, always used to say, I can't say exactly what he said because there's a swear word in the middle of it, but he basically said, if you haven't got a joke, shut the F up. No one came here to find out what you think.
Exactly,
And that's got to be the golden rule for a comedy show, right?
I just also don't know what I think half the time. I just go, oh, right, is that good? I don't know. I'm trying to find a unique angle, right? So it does go a bit to what you said about, are you worried about having the same thing as someone else? So, like, if you're on a show like that and you know everyone's going to be anti-something, I often try and find what's a twisted logic reason it's actually good. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, with Trump doing something crazy, it's like, okay, let's try and think of a really random reason that he's doing it. Like, that has a bit of logic in it that you can't really argue with. I don't actually think he's doing it for that reason, but if I can get a laugh out of, no, the real reason this is happening is it's leading to this, mm-hmm. to this, that's really satisfying to me, and that's the sort of stuff I like writing.
Well, without wanting to, you know, pull apart the sandwich too much, how do you do it? How do you write the jokes? Like, how much of what you're going to say have you, like, really sort of pored over, said already in the mirror, and how much of it is just coming like a sort of flash of light into your brain at the time?
Well, I've never said it in the mirror, because that would make me think it's the most unfunny thing in the world if I had to look at my miserable face. I'd say it's about 50-50. Mm-hmm. So, you know from doing things like the news quiz, you'd be crazy to go on having not read the news. And when you read the news, you think of what to say. You think of some angles on that sort of stuff. But I think lots of the best stuff that people really like from Mock the Week is the stuff that just comes up out of nowhere and becomes all the running jokes that happen in the episodes happen naturally.
Yeah.
And they're always the bits people like the most anyway.
The two things people used to say on the sort of comedy circuit about Mock the Week were that it was very male and that it was very competitive. Are both of those still true?
That's why they brought me in, to get rid of both of those. No, actually, by the time I was on the show, I think that wasn't really true. It was maybe still a little bit too male by the time I got on it. Pretty quickly after I was there, they sort of upped how many women would be on a panel at a time. Very rarely would it be less than two.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the episodes we've done on TLC have always had two or three women. But it was also not that competitive. So obviously you heard all these rumours of, like, it's an absolute bear pit, you can't get a word in and all this stuff. By the time I did it, the day before I did it, Rob Beckett, who was on, phoned me and said, like, good luck, and this is sort of how it will play out and this is how it works. So don't worry about this. On the day, Gary Delaney came to my dressing room and said, I know you've done panel shows before, but this one's a bit different, so these things will happen, don't worry about this, yada, yada, yada. I think he was saying, if a joke doesn't work, it's not that awkward. It's not like a comedy gig when a joke doesn't work.
If it doesn't work, it's not getting in.
If it doesn't work, it's not getting in. Yeah. And also, someone's already going to be talking and the audience will have just forgotten that it didn't work. It won't be uncomfortable. And that really is true. And that's what I now say to new people who come on the show. So it did feel really collaborative. The last one we recorded was the most collaborative episode of Mock the Week I've ever been on. Hugh Dennis was back and everyone was just so chatty and the ball was just in the air the whole time. And so I think the ratio of prepared material versus improvised was probably like 80% in terms of improvised, because people were just having fun.
You always know when it's been good if you're having probably more fun than the audience, or at least as much fun as the audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look, last question on Mock the Week then. How long have you got between when you record and when it goes out? And do you worry about things sort of going stale in that interim?
A little bit. So it's now, we record on Tuesday and it goes out on a Sunday,
right,
which is longer than it's been before.
Yeah.
But actually, I quite like the Sunday. Sunday as a little roundup is quite nice to watch, you know, as a viewer, to watch at the end of the week and go, oh yeah, that is the stuff that happened. Of course, with the way politics moves at the moment, well, for the last sort of 10 years, really, anything could happen in that time. I've always thought that's been sort of the charm of Mock the Week, to be honest. The last episode we did on the BBC, Liz Truss was Prime Minister and it went out 2 days later and then she wasn't Prime Minister. So there's something so fun and satisfying about that. I think people find that funny, especially if we can go back next week and go, oh, we really missed that, didn't we? So far in this series, it hasn't happened. I think one of the tactics is you can sort of zoom out of a story and talk about it in general. You know, we were talking, Starmer's under pressure was sort of what we were talking about. He might not be under pressure by the time it goes out because he might not have a job.
You never
know. But I think if you zoom out and just do sort of general Starmer and not really specific details that can change, then that's how you avoid that. But at the same time, I do think it's quite funny if we do miss it.
I'm sure if he doesn't have a job, he'll still be under some pressure at home. Look, I said that was the last question, but I do have one more. Does it matter, right? I know you said you don't go on there to express your politics, but is it, like, for society, does it matter that you're mocking the week? You know, does it perform a useful function or is it just having a laugh?
It matters financially to me, personally. I am having a laugh, right? Yeah. We're always just trying to have a laugh. I don't think anyone who's going on a show like that is trying to get anything across other than to prove they're funny or to try and have some fun with some other comics. The absence of Mock the Week made me think, oh, it matters when there's not these shows. So it must matter that there is. Because when they all started disappearing and all the panel shows and all the topical stuff started getting cancelled, it did start to feel a bit regime-y. Yeah. And you start to go, oh, this actually is serious that these things are all falling by the wayside. So I guess just by process of elimination there, it must matter that it exists. I would never be so grandiose to say it's we're doing a really important thing by mocking the week, because I don't think that's true. But it did start to feel a bit dodgy when it all started getting canned.
Yeah, works for me. Rhys James, what a pleasure. And look, Mock the Week is available on Sundays at 9 p.m. on TLC, and episodes are available to stream on Discovery Plus as well. Rhys, thank you.
Thank you so much.